So yeah, I am so admire what you're doing. I mean, 2025 it is, by the way. This is your quota now. So yeah, that's going to happen. It's incredible, really, when you think about it, how much of our life is wrong. And we had an incredible conversation over lunch around the topic of equality. And I absolutely urge everyone here to stand behind this because it's about time, honestly. I actually don't think we're doing enough for this. But and I'm writing actually about that. One of the books I'm working on is on the topic with a very unusual approach to the topic of equality. But yeah, to come soon. What I want to talk to you about today is happiness, because that's the other topic that we've ignored for some strange reason. Can I ask a question? And please don't be shy. How many of you here are happy? Great. Okay, that's a good audience. Let's move over here. Can I just ask you, keep your hands up if you don't mind, and keep them up if you're happy all the time, or most of the time, let's say 95% of the time. Okay, all right. So what you can see around you here is an interesting example. Now, we have around 8% of the room. That's, by the way, very typical. 8% of the room that will say, I'm happy most of the time, right? Which, by the way, means that 92% of this room has missed their target. Because anyone here doesn't want to be happy? Right, okay? So honestly, think about it, huh? It's possible, as evident by the fact that 8% do it, but most of us don't. Most of us are not even trying, surprisingly. And it is not a strange story. It's typical for all of us. I was heavily in technology all my life. Was the chief business officer of Google X until February this year, end of February this year. But now I'm focusing on happiness and 1 billion happy. So how did we end up here? Do you think I should shout at it? Move. No. Am I pushing the wrong? So this is one more. Oh, okay. So the clicker goes. So I wasn't always happy. I was very successful at a very, very young age. I started my life as an Egyptian who didn't really have much, didn't really get educated. If you think about it, I was born and raised in Egypt, educated in Egypt, which is not really education. So I haven't gone to school, if you want. But somehow, by age 29, I was extremely successful, made so much money, had all of the things that we all strive to do over our lives and over the course of our lives. And on top of that, I had a wonderful, incredible woman in my life who gave me those two wonderful children, Aya's here in the audience today, and Ali. Aya was basically the sunshine in our life. She was, I was that serious businessman who wanted to accomplish and achieve and go through life. And Aya was the fun element that would wake us up every now and then and say, "Hey, let's go to Disney, right? Or let's go out and do something. Or guys, can we please watch a movie? Or can we do this together?" Or and so on. Ali, on the other hand, was a tiny little Zen monk, right? He was born, I swear. I mean, sometimes I tell myself we should have bought him orange diapers, right? He was that peaceful. Throughout his early years, he was constantly peaceful, constantly happy. I was miserable. I had everything that life could give me, and I was clinically depressed. And so I had to find a way out of this. I read everything that you can find on the topic of happiness. Unfortunately, couldn't get any of it. I was the worst combination you can think of: a control freak, an engineer, and an executive. So basically, if you told me, yeah, if you told me to say I was like, "Are you kidding?" Right? And I still actually, if you tell me to say I say, "Are you kidding?" But that's not the point. We'll come to that later. I had to read on the topic and analyze the topic as an engineer, which is a very unusual take on the topic of happiness, I understand. But when you really think about us as a hyper-predictable machine, an engineering approach might not be a very bad idea at all, right? I took my analysis in a very, very logical way, and I went back to Ali and Aya, which gave me the human element of it. Put it together, around 9 years of research, I ended up with a model that actually made me happy most of the time, the 95% I was telling you about. Unfortunately, the events of my life put that to the test when Ali, our wonderful friend and my personal coach and my son left our world due to an unexpected human error. So Ali was diagnosed with a very simple surgical operation, and five things went wrong in a row. Within 4 hours, Ali left us. And so, as you can imagine, any parent would completely collapse. If I had cried for the rest of my life, Most people wouldn't have blamed me. If you had hugged Ali once, you would say it's okay to cry for the rest of your life. But I didn't, and the family didn't. Actually, we were quite okay. We were not happy. Let's get that clear. Huh? But we were very peaceful. We were okay with it. We went on with our life. And in a very interesting way, instead of having the vengeance of a life for a life and going to chase the doctor and, you know, try to destroy the hospital or whatever, I actually told myself, my son's life is not worth a life. My son's life is worth 10 million lives, right? And 10 million lives not to be taken, but to be given. And so what I did is around 17 days after Ali died, I sat down to write our model of happiness. A book that was called Soul for Happy, came out last year, became an international bestseller everywhere in the world, other than three. The book basically is a very unusual approach to the topic, a hyper-predictable workshop manual that allows you to find happiness whenever you are faced with an event, hopefully not as harsh as losing a child, but even that. And as I said, the mission was actually not the book. The mission was, if I could get 10 million people to find their happiness in terms of understanding Ali's model or our family's model and honor him by having them remember him and send him a happy wish, then maybe I've done well. Maybe it would not bring him back, of course, but it will make things a little easier. It will make it feel as if it was worthwhile for Ali to leave. 6 weeks into the mission, 6 weeks after the launch of the book, most of my videos went very viral online. Many were viewed more than 100 million times. And as a result, the 10 million happy mission was overachieved. And as you can imagine, as a Google executive with a team of supporters, they told me, you're sandbagging. This is not the right target. You should set a bigger target. And so, yeah. And so we ended up setting the billion happy target, which is what we call a Google scale target. Which is not impossible, by the way. On the internet today, a billion is not a big number at all. It's actually quite possible. But I won't be able to do it alone. As you can imagine, we had a conversation over lunch about this. The only way for me to do this is if you actually participate in the mission. So before we start and I tell you about happiness, I ask you to make me a promise. If I tell you two things today that will make you happier, promise me that you're going to tell two people who will tell two people who will tell two people. Right? I don't want them to buy books. I don't care. I want them to know what you learned. Right? If you can do that, that's the exact design of the exponential function. Within 5 years, we will get to a billion happy people. So promise? Good. If I don't give you anything, you have no commitment to me. And if I give you more than two things that make you happier, promise me you're going to tell more than two people. Okay? 15 is around the right number. Okay? Good. So what's wrong with happiness? Why is happiness so hard to find? Why was I given everything in life and not able to find my happiness? I actually drowned myself in all of the things that they promised me will make me happy. I went on vacations. I bought cars, expensive cars, gadgets, you know, anything that you can think of, right? And I could not find happiness. And it hit me that I was happy before I had all of this, which basically told me that happiness was not found in the things that they would promise me are going to make me happy, right? Which is quite interesting when you think about it. So I realized that the reason I wasn't finding happiness in an iPhone 12 was because an iPhone 12 is not going to make me happy because there is no residual happiness in that item, neither in a vacation, neither in an egocentric big apartment or a big house or whatever that is, right? Where was, this felt a little bit, like when you go searching for your keys when you have them already in your pocket. Have you ever done that? It's like you're rushing out of your home in the morning and it's like, where are my keys? And you just dive under the sofa or open the fridge. You won't find them there, right? Because they're not there. They're already here with you. And I would dare say that this is true for happiness, right? You always had happiness right there inside you. This is not a philosophical statement. If you don't believe me, take a look at this. Every single infant you have ever seen in your life, if they were fed, if they were safe, if they were given their basic needs for survival, what was their state? They were happy. They were on their back giggling, watching, looking at the ceiling with nothing in it and happy, right? They didn't ask for an Xbox to be happy. They didn't ask for anyone to tell them, hey, by the way, you look wonderful today, to feel happy, right? They didn't need anything from outside them to feel happy. We are all born happy. As a matter of fact, because this is a technology conference, you would understand this. Happiness is our default setting, right? You know how it is when you get your mobile phone out of the box for the first time and it works perfectly well, right? The menus will swipe through beautifully, the battery will last a full day that first day, right? Remember that? And then 2 days later, it starts to become annoying. Did you buy the wrong phone? Is there something wrong with it? What happened is you started to install weird apps on it, right? Just, you know, the technical analysis in a, you know, in a nutshell is you had that app there that was responsible of reporting what everyone ate around the world, every one of your friends or imaginary friends, and you had the responsibility of opening the app and saying, I like, right? And when you do that every single time, you're eating out of your battery resources. Nothing wrong with the app, by the way. The app is delivering exactly what it's designed to do, which is somehow to upset you. But it's also, you know, eating out on your battery life. You put the app and the phone together and it doesn't work very well anymore. That's exactly what happens to us as children, right? We grow, remember that day when they sent you to school? They were like, you know that playful, joyful, fun stuff? No more, right? We want you to become serious. You're like, serious? I'm 6 years old. Like, seriously, what are we talking about, right? And we believe them. We believe them because the promise that the modern world told us is that success is more important than happiness. And by the way, unhappiness is the tax you have to pay for success, right? This is an absolute lie. As a matter of fact, the reason I became the chief business officer of Google X is because I used happiness as my tool to make everyone around me happy and to become more productive myself. And I'll come back to this later. What, you know, what I found was amazing is that this was documented in a song. Any Supertramp fans in the audience? Yeah, you're telling your age by doing that, right? If you're not a Supertramp fan, your homework for today is to download the Logical song and play it on repeat 50 times until it just cannot come out of your head, because it summarizes your life in 50 seconds. This is how it goes. So it's your default setting. You understand that? That happy child is still in there. If I promise you that there is a way to get that happy child back, would you commit that you're not going to spend another day unhappy? Right? Because happiness, I will show you, is a choice. Now, with that in mind, I'm going to move a little faster because we only have 16 minutes to turn that around. So, happiness is your default setting. Look back at that child. When the diaper was wet, the child cried. When the diaper was changed, the child came back to their default setting of happiness. You understand that? You know what that means? It means the simplest, silliest sentence ever that completely changed my life. It means that happiness simply is the absence of unhappiness. In reality, you know, all of those cosmopolitan magazines, articles that will tell you 10 things you need to do to be happy, there are no 10 things you can do, no three, no two things to be happy. The only thing you can do to be happy is to stop being unhappy, right? If you stop being unhappy, surprisingly, the default setting left behind is happy. And when I found that out, my research flipped upside down. I was no longer looking for reasons for happiness. I was looking for what's making me unhappy, right? If I knew what was making me unhappy and removed it one by one, what's left behind is happy, all right? What you do with your phone when an app is eating out your battery life, there is no other app to extend your battery life, right? You remove the bad app. We remove the bad beliefs, the wrong false expectations, the societal expectations, and so on. So this is what we're going to do right now. Happiness simply is the absence of unhappiness. So what is happiness? Now, as an engineer, I'm telling myself it's the absence of unhappiness, but what generates unhappiness? What generates happiness? Is there a predictable way to do that? And I asked this question, believe it or not, to 20,000 people when I was writing the book, right? I didn't get the same definition twice. Every book you ever read about happiness will tell you, okay, do this and you'll be happy. Yeah, okay, what is happy? No, don't care. You know, just you're going to be happy, right? Now, so I did that in a very engineered way, and I know it sounds crazy, but basically I didn't have a definition, so I did what scientists will do. I took as many data points as I could of moments in my life where I felt happy, and I plotted them on charts, trying to find a relationship, a common trend line that defines what happiness is, right? I call that the happy list. It's an answer to the statement, I feel happy when. And as you can see here, I feel happy when Aya smiles. I feel happy when I have a good cup of coffee. I feel happy when I learn something new. I feel happy when I express myself freely. Most of you, by the way, how many of you have ever done that exercise? It's called the happy list. How many of you actually know the moments in your life that make you happy? Show of hands. Yeah. Great, right? The many of you haven't. And that's actually quite surprising. If what you want in life is to be happy, you should know what makes you happy. Because you will find interesting discoveries from this. One of them is, I have never had anyone, tens of thousands of people have done the happy list after the book, right? No one ever wrote anything like, I feel happy when I win the Nobel Prize, right? No one feels happy when they buy a Ferrari. Right? It never shows up on the list. It's always simple things like I feel happy when I have a good cup of coffee. I have three a day. Right? I simply invite that event into my life as often as I can. Decaf is what I went to afterwards, right? But that's how it is. Now, the interesting other thing is that when you do that exercise, you realize that your life is amazing. That there are so many things in your life that can make you happy only if you allow them. And that gratitude actually makes you happy. Right? The idea that I can do happiness if I want to reminds you that you should be happy a lot more often. But that wasn't the purpose of the exercise. The purpose of the exercise was to understand how happiness and unhappiness are generated. And you know what is the only common thing across all of the moments in your life where you ever felt happy? It's actually so simple. I feel happy when life seems to be going my way. Right? No single event in your life ever made you happy or unhappy. Right? It's an event in comparison to how you want life to be that makes you happy or unhappy. Rain makes you unhappy if you want a suntan. It makes you happy if you want to water your plants. Rain in itself has no residual happiness element in it, value in it, right? It's the comparison to how you want life to be, right? And when you actually look at that, you realize that every moment in your life where you ever felt unhappy was a moment where the events of your life missed your expectations of how life should be. Every moment where you ever felt happy, life seemed to be going your way. You can put that in a very simple engineering equation, mathematical equation, which is your happiness is equal to or greater than the difference between the events of your life and your expectations of how life should be. Now, when you look at it this way, you realize something amazing. Unhappiness, in reality, is just a survival mechanism, right? Because, by the way, even though we use our brains to build iPhones, the only reason you have a brain as a biological function is to solve that equation. Your brain wants you to be safe. So what it does is it compares every event of your life, including sitting on this chair or looking at my T-shirt or, you know, coming a little early or coming a little late. Your brain goes like, is this okay? Are you safe? Right? If it's safe for your brain, it does something amazing. It shuts up. And when it shuts up, your default setting is happy. When it finds that the event worries it, It engages an emotion so that it alerts you. And that emotion could be worry, could be fear, could be anxiety, whatever we associate with unhappiness, right? Of course, the other interesting side of this is the definition of happiness. Happiness is not, in that case, is not what Hollywood has been selling to the world, right? It's not the fun and entertainment and all of the parties and all of that stuff. That's called fun, right? That's the modern world's replacement of happiness. Happiness, in reality, is that contentment, that peaceful feeling you feel inside you when you're okay with life as it is. If you're with a partner and that partner has seven good things and two bad things, and you take it as a whole and you say, but I'm okay, I love this person, that's when you're happy. If you focus on the two wrong ones and obsess about them, you're going to feel unhappy. Understand? Good. So I want to go further into this, but maybe because we're halfway through, I take a sanity check. Are you okay? Am I making you happy? Am I meeting your expectations? Okay. Yeah. Thank you. So this is meeting your expectations. You feel happy. There is something, however, wrong with this equation, right? Because at age 29, the events of my life were even beating my expectations. I had everything I ever dreamt of. Why was I unhappy? For a very interesting reason. It's not the event in its exact, definition. It's a little further than that. So to understand this, we're going to do a quick test. I call it the blank brain test. So to do that, we need you to succeed in doing two tasks at the same time. Task number one is I'm unfortunately going to ask you to think of something that makes you unhappy, right? I think that's going to be easy. Everyone finds a few of those. The second task is to add a few numbers on the screen. It's going to move fast, so you have to be alert, okay? And at the end of the blank brain test, successful ones of us will stay unhappy and have the right answer to the numbers. Are you ready? Good. So think of something that makes you unhappy. Close your eyes, take 20 seconds, find something that makes you unhappy, and reflect deeply on it to find that unhappy feeling inside you. Okay. Now I would ask you to open your eyes and please look at the screen and try to add the numbers as they appear on the screen. Stay unhappy as long as you can, please. Failed already. Okay. Oh, man. All right, just for your information, every Google engineer that's ever seen this added the numbers. So do it. Okay. All right, so here are the numbers again. Did anyone get 1519? No. All right. But this wasn't a math test. Did you see what happened? Did you see I got you from happy to unhappy to happy again in literally 20 seconds, right? This is what we call a full cycle simulation. If you get a machine as an engineer and you need to reverse engineer the machine and you don't have the data that tells you how the machine operates, you take it between its two extreme modes of operation. So at T0, I showed you a big smiley face on the screen and I asked you, are you happy? Everyone said yes, and you clapped, thank you, right? That was T0. T1, I asked you to close your eyes and feel unhappy. You went to your brain and you said, brain, make me unhappy. And it was like, seriously? Thank you. Yeah, I had 640 things I've been waiting to talk to you about, so which one should we start with, right? In 4 seconds, most people actually find something to be unhappy about, right? Then I showed you a few numbers on the screen and you became happy again. Now, two questions will change your life forever, right? Question number one is, if you look at T0 and T1, has anything actually happened in the real world between T0 and T1? Let's say that I asked you to think of something that made you unhappy. So you said, my boyfriend said something stupid on Friday. They always do, right? Right? So, right? Was that not true at T0 as much as it was true at T1? It was. Was that what's the only thing that changed between T0 and T1, may I ask? You started thinking. It's not the event that makes you unhappy. It's the power you grant that event by turning it into a thought and running it into your head over and over and over, right? It's not the events that make us unhappy. It's the way we think about them that make us unhappy. Question number two is even more important. I never managed to find it in my heart to make you unhappy for more than 10 to 15 seconds, and then I start to show you the numbers right away. But assume I asked you to stay with that thought in your head for the next 15 hours. Would your boyfriend suddenly show up and apologize? Would anything change in the real world if you stayed unhappy for the rest of your life? Interesting. So I know people, I'm not making this up, who will tell me, you have no idea what happened to me when I was 16. They were 84 when they said that. Can you imagine? We hang on to those things. They make us unhappy for as long as we can, and nothing happens in the real world. Now, which basically, in my view, means that unhappiness truly is a total waste of life, right? This is the most stupid engineering process on the face of the planet. It's triggered by nothing, and it leads to nothing, yet we do it over and over and over in our life, right? Now, if you had a friend, any Beckys in the room? Right. If you had a friend, let's call her Becky, Becky showed up every 7 minutes and said, let me take you on the side here. I'm going to tell you things that will make you feel horrible about yourself and poke you in the ribs at the same time. Okay? Would you be friends with Becky? Would you listen to Becky at all? Right? Let me introduce you to your Becky. So I would dare tell you that there has never been a moment in your life, ever, that you felt unhappy that was not a result of this 3-pound lump of meat. Right? Every time in your life you felt unhappy, it was because this machine produced a thought, and that thought made you unhappy. Now, I need to tell you two things about this machine that will change your life forever. I promise you. Okay? The first one is, so have you seen Lord of the Rings? Gollum, as he speaks to himself? Right? How many of you have a Gollum in there? Good. The ones that didn't raise their hands are either not paying attention or lying. All right? Every one of us has a voice in their head telling them what to do. Right? Some of us have more than one voice. I can easily imagine that. Right? Now, that voice, the biggest lie of the modern world ever is this. I think, therefore I am. Most of us in the modern Western world believe that this voice talking to me is me telling me what to do. Right? Now, I have a few questions for you. Your heart, as a biological function, pumps blood around your body. How many of you wake up in the morning and say, I am blood? Right? Anyone here thinks of themselves as urine? Right? I mean, the biological function of your kidneys is to take the poisons out of your body in the form of urine. Right? No one says, I'm urine. Yet, everyone says, I am the thoughts in my head. I am me talking to me. If it was you talking to you, why would you need to talk? Seriously, right? It's actually quite intuitive for an Eastern culture to understand that this is just your brain talking to you. Your brain making sense of the world around you and telling you what's going on in the form of words. Because words are the only building block of knowledge that you have. Right? I think, therefore, I am is an illusion. I am, therefore, I think. Or rather, I am, therefore, my brain thinks is the reality of the illusion. Right? Even further, question number two is, do you realize that you're given the most valuable tool on the face of planet Earth, but you're driving it really badly? Because there are three types of thoughts, not one. One is called insightful thinking. Insightful thinking is if I give you a problem to solve, you solve it in your brain in a very different place than the place where you actually do the incessant thinking. Right? Insightful thinking is good. If I give you a problem and you solve it, that's great. There is experiential thinking. Experiential thinking is the type of thinking that we do if I tell you, can you observe where the yellow color is on the slide? You don't judge it, you don't analyze it, you don't say, I like yellow or I hate yellow. You just say, this is where yellow is. You experience the world as it is. This is what meditation does to you. So when they say, focus on your breathing, what you're actually doing is you're observing the world as it is. And because Becky is crippled, she can only do one thing at a time. When you start to focus on your breathing, you don't do this type of thinking, which is incessantly making you unhappy. Right? Now, with that in mind, I actually came to a conclusion that was very straightforward. I decided to treat my brain as a third party. Right? As a third party, my brain was given two simple rules. It's allowed to give me a joyful thought or a useful thought. Any other thought, it was kicked out of my office. Like literally, I would say, that's not going to work for me, brain. Bring me a better thought. Let me give you two examples. When my son Ali died, as a parent, you feel very guilty. So my brain attacked me heavily with the idea of you should have driven him to another hospital. And I wish I could. I wish I could. But 4 days into this, I was like, 4 hours into this, I was like, what can I do with this brain? Like seriously, it's a valid thought, but what can I do with it? Can I go back and drive him to another hospital? Can you please think of something that actually is actionable? And so my brain disappeared for 4 days, and then 4 days later it came back and said, why don't we write his happiness model and share it with the world, get 10 million people to send him a happy wish? Would that work for you, Mo? Yeah, absolutely. Great thought, brain. Let's hang on to this. Right? 10 million happy was born out of a useful thought. The other is a joyful thought. Don't get me wrong. I cry every time I remember that I lost Ali. I miss him. He's my son, right? But when my brain wakes up every morning and tells me Ali died, you know what I do? I say Ali lived. It's the same thought. But if you tell me Ali died, I spend the day crying about missing him. If you tell me Ali lived, I remember the time we spent in Disney. I remember the games we played together. I remember the wonderful conversations. And it's a joyful thought. It doesn't bring him back, but it's a joyful thought, right? Now, if you take that attitude to everything in your life, next time you're discriminated against at work, don't sit down and cry. Ask for a useful thought or a joyful thought. Ask for a thought that says, I'm doing better, okay? Ask for a thought that looks for the full side of the glass. Or ask for a thought that says, I can do better if I do A, B, and C. This is the trait of the successful people that, by the way, are mostly also happy. So it's known by science that, by research, that people who are happy are 12% more productive than those who are not. Why? Because they don't waste their cycles obsessing about things that are useless while Becky is complaining. So with that, I have to close by telling you this was chapter one of the book. So I know many of you will have... unhappiness is so ingrained in us. It is so ingrained in us, it will take so much work to actually take it out. It's like fitness, right? When you decide to become fit, the first week in the gym is horrible. The second week is even worse, right? How many of us wake up every morning and say, I'm going to dedicate an hour of my day to my happiness, right? If we start to do that, suddenly it changes, but it takes so much effort to change because there are 6, 7, and 5. This is the model of Soul for Happy. 6, 7, 5 are 6 grand illusions, 7 blind spots that cause you to see that the events of your life not as the reality of what they are. The first one up there is the illusion of thought. This is what we alluded to very quickly now. I think, therefore, I am is the illusion. I am, therefore, my brain thinks is the reality of the illusion, right? Once you see the reality, you start treating Becky as a third party. Everything changes, right? There are 6 of those illusions. There are 7 blind spots that make us, that get us to be stuck in seeing the grim side of the truth. Where you could be in Los Angeles and, you know, stuck in traffic complaining while you don't really realize that you're not in Syria. Okay? That you should be so grateful for the life that you have. Right? If you fix the 6 and the 7, you will be happy 95% of the time. Most of us, by the way, have 1 of the 6 and 1 of the 7 that lead to most of our unhappiness. I was a control freak who labeled too much. Right? When you do that often enough, you realize that the truth sets you free. Right? That the reality of our life does not really give us so many chances to be unhappy. That unhappiness as a survival mechanism needs to be addressed and taken on so that you fix life as it is. How many of you have ever been upset because 2 opposite poles of a magnet attracted? Nobody. If your finger was stuck between them, you don't complain and say it's life. You realize that this is the truth. This is how things are. And if you start to navigate life with the truth more often, you will find happiness all the time. With that, I would want to remind you of your promise, please. So join me on 1billionhappy.org and please tell 2 people who will tell 2 people who will tell 2 people. We really can shift our world around, okay? And send Ali a happy wish, please. He was truly the kindest man I ever met.
Thank you, Mo. Thank you, Mo God. Thank you. Thank you very much. That was wonderful. It truly was wonderful.